Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to another episode of the Behind the Line podcast, where we discuss all things related to the Super Retriever series. Hey, everybody, I'm your host, David Hamilton, and our guest today is Scott Greer, a guy who, if you've paid attention to the Super Retriever series over the years, you may know him from back in the day and may also know him as a current competitor. Now, before we get started with Scott here, we want to take a quick moment to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Yukonuba, the Super Retriever Series Crown Championship, and this episode of the Behind the Line podcast series are brought to you by Yukonuba, the leader in premium nutrition for sporting and working dogs. As I said a moment ago, my guest today is a gentleman named Scott Greer, who, if you're a handler or a fan of this sport, you're probably very familiar with him. He's been competing in the SRS and the Great Outdoor Games back in the day, then kind of took a break from our specific game to pursue some other events, and then in recent years he's come back to the Super Retriever Series. And Scott, we're excited to have you on the podcast here today.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Let's take it all the way back. When did you first get involved with training dogs, and how did that start, and where did that interest come from?
I bought my first dog in 98. My interest in duck hunting obviously is the reason for buying the first dog, and just got into training it and running the hunt test and just, you know, trying to learn how to train my own dog, and got to be a member of West Tennessee HRC, and got to know J. Paul Jackson. Kind of helped me in the beginning some, you know. We were both kind of learning, but he was ahead of me by a few years. But it was mainly all just for a duck hunting dog, actually.
So when did it go from just being, hey, I want to train a dog to help me with my duck hunting, to maybe this is something that I might want to pursue as a career or at least an interest at that point?
Yeah, with the people that I was around, they were all in the hunt test stuff. And so I was training my dog and went and run my first started test, the HRC started test, probably 99, something like that, in Langille River, which is in Jonesboro, Arkansas. I don't think Langille River is even a club anymore. And went over there and ran a little dog named Paxton, which was my first dog that I just bought out of a newspaper, and just really didn't know any better. And runner and started and passed, and grown man puking behind the truck with nerves and and all that. And so, you know, we just went from there. I ended up getting another little dog named Liza that everybody's going to know more about, because that's the dog that I end up competing with. And bought her like 6 months later, same thing, started season, finished, you know, and was running the Grand by probably 2002 with her. Just getting the info, Mike Lardy's Total Retriever Training was the program that I went with and kind of taught myself how to train, and just fell in love with the hunt test world and that kind of thing. And I never will forget, I was actually mowing the yard, and my wife came out and had the cell phone in her hand and said, "This guy wants to talk to you." And then actually was Justin Tackett, who was the original guy back then that was running the show, so to speak. And he still a good friend of mine. And he said, "I heard you had a nice dog." And I said, "Well, she is to me. That's about all I know." And he invited me to the first ever televised event on ESPN, and it was held behind Max Prairie Wings. And I want to say that was 2002, maybe, something like that. And lo and behold, we ended up, I went over there with zero expectations, just more or less humbled I was even asked. Because you got to remember, I'm brand new, you know. I'm a sure enough rookie. I had no clue what I was doing. But that little dog was special. And she ended up missing winning that thing by 1 point, which is in that game's world, that's a half a whistle. I think Larry McMurray and Dana Giovanelli and all them were judging over in Arkansas. And they were all from Arkansas. We were in Arkansas. Mark Miles won it with a dog named Woody, and he was from Arkansas. And I always accused them. They give me 2 points for ever even started. So I always accused them of home cooking.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah. If the event's in Arkansas, the judges are there and the winner's there, and you lose by 1 point, I think that's a fair gripe on your part, for sure. Yeah.
So, but anyway, long story short, that qualified me for the ESPN Great Outdoor Games in Lake Placid, New York. And so we went and done that. But, you know, her career and, you know, I started, you know, I love training her, and I love running, and I love competing with her. And I ended up training a lot of her puppies, just not to make money, but just to kind of, because I wasn't a rich guy. I was just fresh out of college and working, you know. And I just used that money just to fund, just to pay for her to go, you know. And so I enjoyed it, and I just kind of ended up having a knack for it, you know, went that way. And I've got to give a shout out to, because I was working in the factory and doing this part time, and a really good friend of mine today is Sure Shot Retrievers, Mr. Jimmy McMahon, wanted to know if I wanted to go full time. And he actually was the guy that was able to give me that jump start straight out of that factory into being able to do this for a living without having to suffer any. You know, he filled my kennel full, and we rock and roll, and such a blessing to have Jimmy in my life back then. He's still a good friend of mine, and that was, I want to, you know, I always thank him for that, because that made it real easy for me.
Yeah, made you more willing to take that jump if you knew that there was going to be, you know, a full-time opportunity there.
Right, right, absolutely. You made it very easy. Sure did. Well,
want to ask you a little bit, so a couple questions as follow-ups to those answers there. So first of all, so Justin Tackett reaches out and asks you if you're interested in going to this event. Do you recall how he found out about you? I mean, if at that point you're just a guy with one dog, you know, kind of competing in some hunt tests here and there. How did Tackett find out about you and think that you might be a good person to come maybe try to qualify for the Great Outdoor Games?
Well, you got to remember, the hunt test world is kind of a, you know, is not a very big group, and especially back then. And, but I had run, you know, all over, and everybody knew the little dog and had gotten to know me. Other than that, I really don't know. But I think she was a pretty special dog, and people knew it. And, you know, and it might have just been that Larry and some of those guys over there just knew. And obviously they were pretty tight with Tackett. And so some way or another, my name just come up, you know, in that deal.
Yeah. And like you said, when you have a dog that special, word travels fast. It's funny, before I do these podcasts, you know, I ask different people in the game about the person, just try to get a little additional background information, and Shannon Nardi from SRS actually gave me this. I'm going to read you directly. This is the text message she sent me. She said, ask him about his dog, Liza, for sure. She was awesome, and man, did Scott love that dog. She was the first Sport Dog Team of the Year winner. Let's just chat a little bit about your relationship with Liza and how great of a dog she was.
Oh, man, she was, you know, everybody has that once-in-a-lifetime dog, you know, just lucky, you know, when you reach in that puppy pile and pick. I think the only reason why I picked her was at the time was just because she was the lightest one in the bunch. And, you know, if most people know, she was almost white. And, you know, I think it was a lot of that, all that had, was kind of a God thing, too. I think I was kind of, this is something I was kind of meant to be doing. And so, you know, I think that's how I ended up with her. But, yeah, special. Didn't matter what you were doing, you know, just one of those dogs that loved to work. She wasn't the most talented dog in the bunch, but she wanted to please you. And that was her goal, was to do whatever you wanted her to do. Like I said, she wasn't the most talented dog out there, but if I needed that little small bump cast out there at 200 yards, just she'd do whatever. And so that's where she excelled, was in that way. And but hunting dog, awesome hunting dog, awesome pet, awesome, just is, you know, nothing you can say bad about her other than she didn't live long enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Question for you. When you have a dog that's that willing to please or that talented, how much does it help you as a handler? And I know some people don't get a dog like that till, you know, 15, 20 years into their career where that once in a lifetime dog comes around. But she was fairly early in your days as a trainer and a handler. So how did she help you grow in your role?
Oh, she carried me. You know what I'm saying? She let me, you know, I was able to make those mistakes, and she was smart enough and willing, you know, and able to overcome my problems or me being a rookie and still able to excel, you know, because obviously if I'd had a little more expertise about what I was doing, there's no telling what we could have done. So I was, you know, I was kind of feeling my way through this deal, and it's just kudos to her that she was able to accomplish the things she accomplished with me as a handler. It's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely the situations in life where you're like, I'm the strength here, or man, I'm the weak link. And it sounds like you knew in that situation, out of the two of you, you were the weak one at that point in your career. Let's talk about that. You know, you go to the Great Outdoor Games that first year and you're kind of bright eyed and bushy tailed. And maybe it sounds like a little of butterflies in the stomach there at first couple times. And you're out there competing with some guys like, you know, the Jerry Days, the J. Paul Jacksons, the Chris Akins, the Lyle Steinmans, you know, these guys over the first few years in there that, you know, maybe had more experience than you, but you came along on your own and were no longer a rookie and became a force to be reckoned with competing for several years at the highest level. So How did you make that transition to go from a guy that was maybe kind of the up and comer to, hey, this is a guy other people need to pay attention to?
Yeah. Oh, with me, it's always just been hard work and determination. You know, I'm probably not the brightest trainer in the world. I'm gonna outwork you if I can. So it's always with me, it's just been work harder at it. And so, and then the more you compete, the more you learn, and the more you put forth the time and effort to get better. And so, you know, just over the years of being around those guys and just learning, it's just like any other profession, you know, the more you do it and the more time you put in it, the better you become at it, you know. And but it's definitely, you know, a lot of work and a lot of persistence that goes into getting better. But you know, it was, when I showed up at Lake Placid, it was like, well, you know, man, I have really stepped out here and on a limb, you know, and I can just remember, you know, Liza was a 2-year-old, and I went out there to do a little training because it's a pretty good drive out there, and I ended up training with Larry McMurray and Jerry Day, and Jerry Day's running a old hound named Super Sue, and I'm like, and when we were training, and my dog, my little 2-year-old, was doing she's hunt troop champions, and she's doing everything they're doing, and I'm sitting there going, what's so special? I mean, what is super about Super Sue? You know, and I'm thinking, you know, it's just, you know, well, she showed me, because when it got game time, oh boy, you talking about a dog that could go get them now. It was absolutely amazing. They put me in my place in a hurry, but you know, it was, you know, we didn't even get out of the first series, I don't believe, or the first cut, but you know, I was just tickled to be there, to be honest with you. That time in my career with just being, you know, 2 years into it, being on TV and being on ESPN and all that publicity that give me, you can't put a dollar figure on that. It really just jump-started my career leaps and bounds ahead of what it would have been had I not had that. It was really a blessing. And a lot of times I would just, if I made the top 12, I was just glad to, I felt like I'd won if I made a TV show, you know, that was my goal, just to get on TV. It's just hard work, lots of determination.
Yep. Sounds like that helping hand from Jimmy McMahon, plus the exposure on television, plus your own hard work ethic, really propelled you together. Yeah, and those kind of made the winning formula there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then for several years in a row, man, you qualified for the championship. I don't even know how many years in a row. So at what point did it go from just trying to be there to, all right, I'm going to try to win this thing?
Yeah. I was always trying to win. You know, when I, don't get me wrong, it was always about winning, but I was always, you know, kind of a realist and knew that, you know, just to be thankful, you know, for something.
Sorry, let me rephrase that question. At what point did you think you could win? Right? Like you always want to expect to win, but like what point did you think like, hey, I got a shot at this?
No, I always thought I could. I mean, even, you know, cause you know, when I showed up with Liza that first time, I was one point from winning. So I never ever felt like I couldn't win. And so, you know, I was always there to win, but I was always thankful also, you know, for, you know, just for being there and especially on the front end, because I was so young in the game. So anything I could accomplish, I was happy with, but I always felt like I could win.
But in addition to Liza, you had a couple other dogs that you had a lot of success with over the years, Addy and Luke. Can you tell us a little bit about those dogs?
Yeah.
And their personalities, and you know, maybe how they were similar or different to Liza among the three dogs?
Yeah. All females except Luke. They were the Addy and it's actually Abby. Addy was owned by one of my best friends, Tom Mathis, and then Abby was owned by Clark Barton of Mississippi. But anyway, that just kind of the same thing. Not necessarily the most talented dog in the field, but team players, just like Liza. They would just do what you told them to do. You know what I'm saying? And so. You know, they, especially Addie. Addie was, you know, it's kind of the same thing. When she qualified for the crown, she was just a 2-year-old. And so, you know, and so when we got to the crown, it was always a struggle to compete because of our youth, so to speak. And it's funny you mentioned Abby. See, Abby wasn't even, she won the Union City event, which was Lyle Steinman's first ever SRS event that he ever attended, was that Union City event, and it was a huge event. And it was at Final Flight where Kelly Powers, goose calling champion, his store there, and we ran up there, and Abby wasn't even supposed to be there. Liza come in heat. And so I just asked Clark, could I run Abby in her place? And he said, sure. And so I just took her just on a whim and end up winning. So it was that was kind of strange, and she was super, super nice dog. Luke, I always said Luke could think like a human. He was very, very intelligent. He knew where all the birds were. You know, we talk about he had talent where some of them wasn't as talented. He was very smart. And he you could just see him out there. He was a great big yellow dog, and you could just see his wheels turning and thinking and looking. And he goes, that bird's right here, you know. And I actually have a little cool story that he won the Miami, Oklahoma event at Derek Randall's. And you would think that would be the coolest story, but actually the best story about Luke was when we ran Stacy West's event in North Carolina, and it was the one and only event that Danny Farmer, and everybody knows Danny Farmer, it's the one and only SRS event that he ever ran. And so I think Tackett twisted his arm and got him to come run, and he was the one. That was the one and only time that he'd ever competed in the SRS. And so, you know, and that was all pretty cool because we wanted to beat him, you know, because he's a famous Danny Farmer,
right?
And we wanted to show him a little bit about our game, you know, and he showed us. But Luke, we were on dog stands. I think Chris Aiken was a Bubba Gunner with Boomer. I mean, it was a timber hole like none other. It was so full of stuff you couldn't imagine. And we shot like six. It was all teal. They threw them all in them woods, and then had a blind retrieve. And Luke picked up all six clean, and then he three whistled the blind. And so I was thinking, you know, and then Aiken looked at him. He said, nobody gonna touch that. So I'm walking back to the truck thinking, you know, I got this. And well, Stacy West and Rankin still had to run, and Danny Farmer and Jack. Well, long story short, Stacy West and Rankin picked all six up, and he two whistled the blind. And Danny Farmer came up and picked up with Jack, picked all six up and lined the blind. And so I went from, you know, hey, you won this thing, ain't nobody touched this, to third. So you don't ever count your chickens before they hatch.
Absolutely. Hey, that isn't just a good piece of advice in the dog game. That's a good piece of advice in life, right?
Right. So I'm sitting here looking at in my office and just looking, you know, at pictures that are on the wall. It was also a little dog named Candy that I ran that did real well, and a golden retriever named Sage that we did well with. And so, you know, it was a lot of fun back then. We had a great time. Chris Aiken and Derek Randall and Keith Allison and all those guys back in the day, I mean, we just absolutely had a ball. It was so much fun. We were competing against each other, and we all knew that, but we were just the best of friends, and we would all jump in together and travel together, even though we were competing, you know. And back in that day, it's you know, the SRS is way different than it was then. Back then, we just had fun with it. And we, you know, I just can't tell you how much fun we had. It was unreal.
That's great to hear, man. Yeah, we're sitting here chatting with Scott Greer. And real quick, we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Yukonuba. Sporting dogs give us everything we ask for and then some. Their nutrition should do the same for them. You can find out more information about Yukonuba at yukonubasportingdog.com. Also follow them on Facebook and Instagram, username Yukonuba Sporting Dog. Scott, interesting enough, you were mentioning about back in the day, you had a ton of fun in the Super Retriever Series. Then you took a few years off where you weren't competing as often in the Super Retriever Series, still doing a lot of stuff with dog games, but just focused your efforts elsewhere. What inspired you to come back to Super Retriever Series, and how has the game changed over the years? Because the last couple of years, you've kind of been back in it. Now, I imagine it's a little bit different than it was in some of those earlier days.
Yeah, it's a ton different. Obviously, all the faces are different except for maybe Lyle Stein and Bobby Wills. But the setups are different. You know, the white coat, when they come in and did that, that's actually one of the reasons why, you know, I just couldn't compete in that white coat part. My program wasn't designed to be able to compete in it. And we just took a little leave of absence and went and we started running the national, and that took a lot, the master national, and that took a lot more time. And so we just focused on other things, but that white coat was changed the SRS tremendously. Cause in the beginning, we didn't have any of that. And so, you know, I had to learn that game, learn that part of it. And, the dogs are better, the training's better, the equipment's better. Everything has just evolved over the years, and everything's just, you know, just better. I don't want to really say we were competitive, but it seems a little more competitive, you know. There's not people riding together.
Going to not as much camaraderie like as there used to be, you know, sounds like, yeah.
They're all good friends and all that, but I'm not sure they're as tight as we were, you know. But it's used to. You could take a dog like Liza, and if you handled on a mark, if you just needed a dog that would handle, you know what I'm saying? That could handle your way through there and be all right. But nowadays, you know, everybody says, well, you know, the SRS, you know, that they encourage handling too much or whatever. But I'm just telling you, if you handle a mark in the SRS, you're probably not going to win. The dogs are just that good. It's just unbelievable. And what caused me to come back was actually just my client. I got a tremendous group now that are clients of mine that have pushed me to get back in that game because they're competitive and they want to play it. And they, you know, and what's good about it is they got dogs that can compete. And so that's made it easy to come back. Dogs that can compete at that level are not really, they're kind of hard to come by. And so I was lucky that these folks had the dogs that we needed to compete. I told them when we started, it was a little over a year ago, it was last summer when we ran our first one, I had run a couple just picking along, just cause it being Pinto. I always went over to Pinto. I never did do really well, but it was really just kind of help those guys and promote their cause over there. But we hit it last summer. We come back with intentions of being ready to play. But I told those guys, I said, you know, we're a year or two from being able to win one of these. And so, you know, I was right. It was a little over a year. And we was able to win one this year. But just clients pushing me to do it. I'm glad they did. It's been a lot of fun, and it's been fun for me a challenge for me to just kind of prove to myself that I could come back and do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, we all know the old sayings, can't teach an old dog new tricks, but sometimes you can't teach a trainer new tricks either. So as a guy like yourself who's always done the hunt test, how'd you prepare yourself for the field trials? Because you even said a few moments ago that the white coat stuff wasn't really your area of expertise years ago. Yeah. So how'd you get better at that so that you knew you could compete in all five series?
Well, it's just being in the game and learning. You know, it's been 10 years since I run the SRS. And so you know, over the years, I've just learned, you know, I learned how to do it, but I just wasn't doing it. So when I decided to go back and do it, I knew how to do it and what I needed to do. And back in the day when the white coat first hit the SRS, I wasn't knowledgeable enough then to be able to pull it off. And I'm not so sure I had the dogs either. There's one thing that I've always prided myself in is, you know, there's a lot of these guys, and I'm not knocking it. I mean, if they got the money to go buy the best dog on the planet, by all means, go buy it. I don't blame them one bit. But just far as me personally, I pride myself in these dogs that I'm playing with and have won with, for the most part, are dogs that I built myself. I didn't buy it. I built them from the ground up. So, you know, when you talk about Liza and Addie and Candy and Luke and pretty much Abby too, I got Abby a little later in life, but she wasn't even a master hunter. So I had to teach her, you know, all those dogs, I built them. And so there's a lot of pride goes into that.
Oh, I'm sure.
So
a question for you, like, what's it like as a, and I get sometimes guys have to pick and choose which one they do. Maybe they don't go to all three. And I don't know your plans this year, but how hard is it in the fall every year if someone, you know, qualifies for the crown and you got back to back to back, you got the grand, you got the crown, you got master national, and you're on the road, I mean, several weeks in a row there. So how much of a challenge is that for someone that maybe tries to pull it all off?
Oh, that's a grind. We're getting ready for the grind. We're right here. You know, I think I got one more day tomorrow to kind of get some things done that I need to do, and then we roll out, you know, next week. And so I'm actually going to be gone for a month. You know, we roll into St. Louis. We pre-train for 3 days. Start that event. That's a 5-day event, and then we leave straight from there to go to Idaho. We'll have a week there to kind of catch our breath and get the road knocked off the dogs and get our feet back under us. And then we got another week long event there. Take us 3 or 4 days to get home, and then I think I might have 1 week to get ready for the crown. And so in the meantime, we got master tests that need to be ran for dogs that are not going to the crown, and, you know, and trying to qualify for next year's national. And it's going to be an interesting month for sure.
Sounds like it. What are you expecting this year at the crown? I mean, like you said, it was kind of 10 years when you didn't run, and then you run a year to get your feet back under you. And now you've qualified for crown championship, first one that you've been at in a while. So what are you expecting out of that experience?
I'm going in there trying to win. I'm always a humble guy and a realist, and you know, and that's saying, you know, me saying that I'm going there to win is, you know, in the back of my mind goes, I kind of like, yeah, well, you better bring it, boy. but I've got 3 really nice dogs, and we're gonna go in there and do the very best we can. And try to come out there and maybe win one.
What would a win mean to you? Like you said, qualified. Maybe one of them has a stellar weekend. You have a great weekend with that dog, and the next thing you know, you're looking up and you're the crown champion.
Which, you know, it would mean a ton, because as all the years that I've run the Super Retriever Series, I never ever did well in the crown championship. When I'd always get them there. You know, I'd get to the Great Outdoor Games, but I never ever did well there. And so, not really sure why, but it just, the stars never lined up for me like that. And so, you know, to be able to come back and finally say, "Hey, all right," after all these years, I finally did win one. It would mean a ton. It really would. It might be icing on the cake.
Hey man, well that's the perfect way for us to almost end this thing. I will just say I wish you luck, and I'll be there with you, cheering for you. I can't pick favorites, obviously, as the TV host guy and the and the podcast guy, but I'll be right there in Shreveport-Bossier with you. So I'll be cheering you on, man. Before we let you go, we always kind of end this podcast with five final questions. It's rapid fire. I ask a question quick, just kind of first answer that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Question number one, what's something about you that most people don't know?
Ooh, you want it rapid.
Or just anything. I mean, we had one guy tell us he's allergic to dogs. That's the best one ever.
Hey, there you go. I am allergic to dogs.
You are?
Yeah.
Wait. You're the second guest we've had on the show as a dog trainer, and you're allergic. So what do? Just take a lot of, like, Claritin or something?
I don't, most dog trainers have a dog that lives in the house with them.
Right.
And I'm not able to do that, but open air, I do okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. My wife has a cat that sleeps on her pillow, and then she wakes up every morning with, like, itchy eyes. And I'm like, maybe if the cat wasn't on the pillow, your eyes wouldn't itch.
Yeah,
when I say retriever, who's the first dog that comes to mind and why? It could be a dog you trained or one that somebody else trained.
Probably Liza. That's how special she was.
If you had to describe yourself in one word, what would it be?
Humble.
Love it. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Pilot.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Final question for you. You have a weekend to yourself, no dog games to compete in, nothing to do work-wise, no honey-do list, like cut the grass. How are you spending that time?
If it's honey season, I'll be hunting.
Yeah, it seems to be a pretty uniform answer there. A lot of guys say hunting, and if it's not hunting season, even though I say in the question and I preface it by saying, and no training to do, they're like, I'd still be out training.
I think that
speaks volumes for how much all of you handlers love the training aspect, and then during hunting season, going hunting. So it's great to chat with you today, Scott. We really appreciate your time, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks a lot.